I'm powerless over alcohol and drugs. And most people do know me by D. I've been called that for a long time, but most people don't know my real name, so I decided I would share my real name tonight, because that's who I am today. I'm really, really nervous. Someone texted me yesterday, and I wanted to read this because someone told me that they were looking forward to me speaking tonight, and they asked me, did I need anything? And I said, yes, some nerves, because I'm nervous. I already was nervous when I was asked a month ago, you know, just that feeling in the pit of my stomach, you know. And they replied back and said, fear prayer. God, remove this fear from me and help me to be what you want me to be. And that just put me at ease, you know. I'm supposed to share what it was like, what happened, and what it is like today. My anniversary date is August the 5th, 2007. And I always start my meetings off with free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. Because God has removed the fear and as you can tell, I'm still nervous. Freedom from the bondage of self. That's what I'm trying to say. All of my life, I've been labeled a hard head, strong willed. If my mother told me to go right, I went left. If she told me to go up, I went down. Always had this thing about myself that I thought I knew what was best for me. At the age of 13, I was at some friend's house, and they had some white lightning. And never drank in my life. I decided, you know, I'm going to drink this, and I'm going to drink it straight. And I remember drinking the white lightning. I remember the glass falling from my hands, and that was it. I had a blackout, my first experience with drinking. I don't know what happened. I just remember coming to at the door of my house with my mother answering the door with this look of disgust on her face. And I was off to the races. I didn't like what it did, and as far as I don't remember what happened, but the next time I tried it, I didn't do white lightning. And I liked the way it made me feel, you know, as I've heard a lot of people say, you know, and I didn't really realize that that's what it was when I was doing it, but when I got into AA and heard other people share their stories, it did give me, you know, this empowerment, you know, like I could say what I wanted to say. I could really do what I wanted to do, and I had no fear, you know, and I liked that about it. You know, it made me into somebody that I wanted to be. I am the oldest of four, and I'm what you would call a bastard child. My mother and my father never married. My father went on and got married and had two kids, and my mother got married and had three other children. So I've always felt like the outcast. At a very young age, I felt different, not a part of. I can remember times, you know, my stepfather would come home and he'd have his, you know, my sister on one lap and my brother on another lap and my other brother standing holding him. And I would be sitting across the room looking at them with jealousy and not fitting in kind of feeling, you know. When I look back on it today, it was just me. I could have joined in. I'm sure he wouldn't have had a problem with that. But I guess I kind of liked being on the outside looking in. You know, it kind of made me feel justified, so to speak. the next significant thing that happened in my life at that same age of 13 is I was hooking school. I was at some friend's house. Roberta Flack was singing on the radio, Killing Me Softly with his song, and I was having sex. Never had sex before in my life, but we were drinking, and I wanted to fit in with these, you know, kids that I was hanging out with, and I got pregnant for the very first time I had sex. I know it was because I didn't do it no more. It wasn't enjoyable. It was just something I did. I knew I shouldn't have been doing it, and I never did it again. But I remember thinking, as month after month went by, something wasn't happening that normally happened on a monthly basis. And I can remember praying and saying, God, please don't let me be pregnant. My mother was the disciplinarian in my family. I was fearful of her. I didn't feel like I could go talk to her. And so I didn't say anything. I thought if I didn't think about it, it would go away. Well, it didn't go away. In the meantime of all of this going on, I'm running wild. I'm, you know, not going to school. I'm not, you know, taking care of my brothers and sisters, you know, being responsible. I'm supposed to bring them home from school and look after them and cook and clean and all the things that, you know, families do for each other. I'm not doing any of that. I'm running around with my friends, drinking and smoking weed and just doing D. And my mother decided, you know, that she wanted to put me away. And I ended up going to a girl's home in on 14th and U, Washington, D.C. I lived in Washington, too, by the way. I grew up on Stanton Road in southeast D.C. But she put me away too late because by that time I was already pregnant. I can remember staying there for a while and she coming to get me. And we went back home and tried to go back to a normal life, but I was just too far gone, you know. I decided one day I didn't want to follow my mother's rules anymore. I didn't want to go to school. I wasn't going to do anything but drink and smoke weed. And I moved in with my boyfriend. And it wasn't anything my mother could do, you know. And I stayed with him and his sister. And by the way, he was like 16, you know, so it was like children. And my grandmother and them came over for the holidays. I got pregnant in like April. And around Christmas time, my mother had a party and her parents came and my grandmother and all my cousins and my aunts. And I came over to visit and I didn't go home that night. And the next day, December 26, 1973, I had a little boy. And I went back home with my mother. That's how I got back home with my mother. She just let me come back home. And I stayed with her for a while. And the following year, in 1974, I decided to pack up and go to Baltimore to live with my grandmother. And I knew if I went there, I could do what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, how I wanted to do it, without my mother's hovering over me, so to speak. So that's what I did. As y'all can figure out by this time, I did what I wanted to do. My father, who lived in Baltimore at the time, came over one day, told me to pack my stuff. He said, you are going to go to school. You are going to take care of this child. And he moved me to live with him. And that's what I did. I went back to school. Fast forward, he had too many rules, too. So I woke up one day and decided I don't want to live here anymore either. So I packed my bag and my baby, and I went back to my grandmother's. And that's where I stayed. Fast forward, I ended up trying to go back to school to, I dropped out of school in the eighth grade. I completed the eighth grade. And didn't go back to school, but I did try to, you know, get my GED and things of that nature. Wasn't successful because every time it got hard or every time it got in the way of my drinking or my partying, I would quit. And that went on for years. So basically, I just worked, took care of my son to the best of my ability, stayed with my grandmother, did what I wanted to do, and life went on. I loved party. Bright lights, the whole nine yards. I'm sure my parents probably just didn't even know what to do with me, you know. But anyway, I went on, and what happened was, I ended up meeting this guy, and we had an eight-year relationship, and I worked, and that didn't work out, and I moved back to D.C. area. All of this is Baltimore, Maryland, and D.C. That's my three places. And I ended up moving back with my mother. At this point, it's like 1984. I started working for D.C. Public Schools. My son is, you know, growing older. And then, you know, I know this is an AA meeting, so I'm not going to get into what else occurred, but I got introduced to some other stuff. And, you know, my life was okay. You know, I was working. I was supporting my son. It was okay. You know, I'm still, I think I went back like three times to go get my GED. It's just something that I knew I needed to have. It's something I always wanted for myself. And most of all, I was never stupid. I just was lazy. I didn't want to do it, you know. I just didn't want to do it, you know. So anyway, I got introduced to some other substances, and my life got really, really bad quick. And I decided I was going to work a part-time job so that I could support my habits and, you know, still, you know, be responsible and pay my bills and things of that nature. And, like I said, I landed a job for D.C. Public Schools. I ended up not being responsible. I would do things like go to work, go lay on the floor in the bathroom, act like I was going to use the bathroom, but I would be in there asleep because I had been up all night, you know. I remember one time I got a check for 89 cents. I had no leave. And I got a check for 89 cents. I never cashed it. You know, I got an apartment, someone broke in my house, and I was scared, because of the things that I was doing. I didn't know if they were going to come back or what. I didn't have much. They stole all of my brother's stuff, but I didn't feel comfortable staying there. So instead of, like, quote unquote, normal people going to the rental department and saying, I want to move, I'm uncomfortable, I'm on the bottom floor, I just moved. I didn't tell nobody anything. And moved in with another guy in the same complex. And next thing I know, they evicted him, probably trying to get to me. So at this point, I don't have anywhere to go. My life is unmanageable. So I called my mother. And I ended up moving in with my mother. My son at this point is doing his own thing. I guess he's about 15 years old. He's out in the streets. I get with my mother, and she helps me. And, you know, I never heard of AA. I never heard of any. I never heard of NA. I didn't know that there was a place I could go for people like me. I never knew anybody that had been. I've never heard. And what happened is I ended up, because my job was definitely threatened, I ended up going through my EAP counselor, and my mom helped me with that. And I remember going to see this lady, and she says to me, I want you to go to these meetings. And she handed me this sheet that I had to get signed. And she said, I want you to go, and I want you to ask them to sign their name on here. And when you come back next week, I want to see it. I think I had to go to like 3 meetings a week. And I just remember feeling flabbergasted that she would ask me to go to some meetings to get a sheet signed. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, I got a problem. And I don't understand how going to a meeting is going to help me with my problem. You know what I'm saying? I don't have no money. My car is jacked up. My son is out there in the streets. You know, my job is on the line. And you're telling me to go to some freaking meetings. And I remember saying to her, okay, so if I don't go, what's going to happen? And she nicely said to me, she said, well, if you don't go to the meetings, then you'd be wasting your time and you'd be wasting my time. I was thinking about that. Well, if I'm wasting her time and my time, then I'm seriously not going to have a job if I don't do this. So reluctantly, I just snatched the paper from her and decided I would give it a try. I know my first 3 or 4 meetings was back then. This was in 1990, by the way. I went to the meetings, and it was like smoky, and, you know, people were standing around on the walls because it wasn't enough seats, and, you know, this is in Maryland, in Temple Hills. It was a fog to me. You know, I went in there, and I'm like, what are they talking about, a higher power, and, you know, keep coming back, and, you know, it was just like French to me. But I got my sheet signed, and I went back. And I wanted to get into rehab, but my insurance wouldn't cover it, you know. And I just thought that if I got to rehab, you know, they would help me. But because I had to go to these meetings, and then what she did was put me in outpatient treatment, and so I had to go there, and I had to give them urine and all that good stuff. And what ended up happening is I got a 1-month chip. And that just kind of, made me feel like, wow. I went a whole 30 days and I didn't drink and I didn't do anything else. And I think that's where the hope came in for me, you know. Those chips kept me sober because it was like, oh, 30 more days, I'm going to get a 60-day chip. And so I was on my way. I kept going to meetings. The people were really nice. People were giving and caring. I didn't have a car by the time I got to AA. Matter of fact, I didn't have nothing when I got to AA, nothing. And actually, I originally started going to NA. And what happened is I thought I was going to an NA meeting one night. And it was an AA meeting. And the guy at the door, Kenny G, I'll never forget him. He's deceased now. I remember him standing at the door and welcoming me, and he said, "You're in the right place." And I think for the first time since I had been going to meetings, and I can't remember, like, how much time I had. It was less than a year. I don't remember, you know, how much time I had been going at that point. But I remember when he said that to me, it just kind of, this peace kind of fell over me, you know. And their meetings were different than the meetings that I was used to. They didn't read 20 things before the meeting started, you know. And it was a lot of people there with a lot of sobriety. And it wasn't as cliquish to me. It was very cliquish in the other fellowship for me. And I think from that day on, I made that my home group. You know, and they said, as long as I don't talk about the other stuff, just keep it based on Alcoholics Anonymous, that I was okay. And that became my home group. It was hugs and kisses. What was it, Chuck? Handshakes and hugs. I'm right. I'm sorry. I said hugs and kisses. But yeah, that became my home group, and that's, you know, where I stayed. I remember celebrating my first anniversary. You know, they say in AA, if you can't remember your anniversary date, you probably haven't had your last drink. But I actually can remember my first anniversary. Because I just couldn't believe that, you know. First of all, I never thought that much of myself. I never thought I would accomplish anything. And so for me to stay sober for a whole year was a big, big deal. And I know y'all say there are no big deals in this program. But for me, there are no big deals that I have to take a drink or a drug over. That's the part I always left out. I don't know if I just never heard it, but there are no big deals that I have to drink over. And so for me to celebrate a year was a major event in my life. It was so major that I only had women participate. They all had to wear black and white. I took black and white pictures. I mean, because I had to have it together, you know what I'm saying? You know, that's just who I am, you know? It's all about me. And that's how it went. They laughed at me like y'all laughing at me now, and I could care less. Because I was like, I don't know about y'all, but I've never been sober for a whole year in a long time. I was 30 years old when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So that was May of 1991. In November of 1991, my only child died. He was murdered. And as a direct result of the disease of drugs and alcohol. And I know for a fact today that if I had not been sober, I wouldn't be standing here. Alcoholics Anonymous changed my life. You know, I know I wouldn't be here. Everybody was very, very kind and loving. And everybody said the right things. Can you hold this for me? That thing keep making noise. I only wanted to read that portion. But the most profound thing I heard, and I'll never forget her either, Leslie, and she's not here anymore either. Les is what we called her. And she said, "Dee, we're all born to die." I think out of everything that was said, that really kind of resonated with me and made me realize that, you know, I had to accept the situation you know, that I was powerless over it, you know, that it wasn't anything I could do to change it. And I can remember how proud my son was for me for being sober. I can remember the last time I saw him. As a matter of fact, I had company that night, and he was always kind of like my father. Like, I used to tell him all the time, you're the man of the house. Because it was just me and him. You know, so anytime I did something or someone was there, he had to check out the scene, you know, and make the decisions. And he had called me one night, and he asked me, what was I doing? And I said, I'm sitting here watching TV with my friend. Who? He needed to know who it was. And when I told him, Chuck was over there. He said, I'll be right over. He didn't know Chuck. Y'all had told me when I first got here that I shouldn't have any relationships in that first year. That was probably the only thing I did right in that first year, was no relationships. I actually really tried to keep the focus on myself. I hung out with women. That was my network. And so, anyway, he came on over, and he had to meet him. I introduced him to him. And then he goes in the kitchen, and he says, Mom, come here. And I walk in the kitchen, and he said, I like him. Mm-hmm. That was the first time he'd ever met him. He's never said that about anybody. Mm-hmm. And like I said, later on, he passed. Fast forward. One other thing I wanted to, that's significant that happened that same year is, I took my GED test, and I got my GED, and I got that thing, and I put it in a frame. Well, first of all, when I first got it, I just dropped to my knees and thanked God, because it was something, like I said, I had tried on many occasions, but it always got in the way of my drinking. And I framed that bad boy, and I took it to my home group, and I... See my GED? I was so proud. October 1991. Fast forward. I got married December 1992. I had 2 years that May. Chuck and I got married in 92, and in 93, I moved to Sterling, Virginia. Let me just say this. My first few years in AA, I did not work on these steps. I did not go to literature meetings, big book meetings. I only went to open discussion meetings, because in open discussion meetings, I could talk. I never went to literature meetings, because in order to speak at a literature meeting, you have to work the steps. So I wasn't working on no steps. I didn't realize that that's what I wasn't doing at the time. I really didn't, you know. As far as sponsorship goes, the first time they would tell me something or suggest something that I didn't want to do, they were fired. I never told them. I just kept it moving. Okay, sure. This one of my sponsors told me one time that I was dressing provocatively. And I looked at her and said to myself, because I ain't say it to her, I look way better than you look. And if I looked like you, I wouldn't be dressing provocative. In other words, I felt like she was jealous. You know what I'm saying? I'm a young woman. I don't have no man. You know what I'm saying? I'm sober. And she telling me I need to change. And I'm looking at her, and she's old. And I'm thinking, lady, if I look like you, I wouldn't be dressing provocative either. So I kept all of that to myself, though. So anyway, I went to, I got married. We moved to Sterling. I was looking for a sponsor right away. I got one. And the meetings were different. You know, I was used to AA in Maryland. And I'm looking around the room, and most of the people look like me, my color. And when I went to Sterling, they didn't look like me. They didn't talk like me. They didn't experience the stuff I experienced. You know, I would see women sitting around the table knitting. I had never knitted in my life. Talking about, you know, the cat died and I took an extra pill. And I just couldn't get with it. I tried, I really did. I'm not prejudiced. I don't want y'all to think that, because most of my life I've always went to school. I was always, you know, the only black in my class, that kind of thing. But when I got sober, I would hear people like Bill H. Living in the man, in the land mine. You know, dirty, nasty, stinky, low down. You know, I would hear people like Ethel C. You know, I'm a dope fiend. I just heard the kind of stories I was kind of, you know, that's what I was used to hearing. And, you know, in addition to my drug, my alcoholism, you know, the other stuff that I did, I was out there. So I could relate to them. And I just couldn't relate. And, you know, I just stopped going to meetings. And I didn't say to myself, I can't relate, I'm not coming no more. That didn't happen. What happened was, I didn't go to a meeting and nothing happened. Nothing happened. Life went on. I was still sober. I had a good job. I was married. I had a nice home. You know, I had all the credit cards. I mean, I thought I had arrived. I really did. I was like, this is good. And as everybody knows, most of the people have heard my story and Chuck's. We went on that cruise, and that was all she wrote. They had drinks on there that weren't out when I last drank. They was looking pretty. The music was going. We were out on the water somewhere, Costa Rica, and, you know, the atmosphere was different, and I hadn't been to a meeting in a long time. I definitely didn't have a sponsor. Everything was going good, and I took a drink. And, you know, I don't know how many days we had been on there before we did it, but few days later, you know, we were getting off of that boat, and I did not say this. Chuck said it. He said, what goes on the boat stays on the boat. He said that. And I believed him. You know, and I tell people all the time, he had more time than me, you know, so he's, you know, I'm dumb, and he was dumber, because he should have known better. And that brings me to this. Since I've been in Culpeper, I have claimed that I had 16 years, and I went back out, and really, I don't know, we were talking, what, a few months ago, Chuck? I don't know. And he told me, he said, Dee, you didn't have 16 years. You had 15 years. No, I had 16 years too. No. But when I think about it, Charlie's anniversary was in September. Mine's was in May. So when we relapsed, it was in September. So he did have 16 years, and the following year I would have had 16 years. So my story has changed. I had 15 years, and then I went out. I had to get that off my chest because this is an honest program. I lied for so long, I believed it. Y'all told me that it happens. So anyway, I got a few more minutes. All right, so, you know, we came back. Hell, it went down. Stuff was on the line. My life was so unmanageable. But it was really, really, really hard to see my husband go down because I didn't know him as an alcoholic actively drinking. It was a nightmare. And, you know, I'm not supposed to tell his story, but his story is my story. And I just remember him going to try to get help, detox several times. And I can remember through this whole process, you know, he is really bad. I'm not bad, but he's really bad. I was okay, but I could stop anytime I got ready, for real. I was the same one, you know. And I just, you know, as a result of him going down, we both went down. And I remember when he finally decided he was going to come back to AA. And I remember him coming to me one day and saying, D, you know, I'm going to go back to AA. Are you going to come? And I just told him, no, I'm not going back. Ain't nothing wrong with me. You the one got the problem. Because, see, I still had my job. I was still making money. I was, you know, I mean, he was really the sick one. And I didn't want to go back to AA and tell y'all the truth. And he said, D, you know, what they going to say to me? I said, well, what they going to say to you? Well, the first thing, and I remembered when he said it, I didn't like it, but he said, we have to remove ourselves from those people, places, and things. And me, still actively, he was going to have to leave me. And so then I got pissed. And I said, F you, FAA, I'm not going back. And I remember walking away. And, you know, I've heard this a lot, too. When you've been in the program and you relapse, you can't do what you used to do. Because, see, it's still there. It's embedded in me, you know. And I knew what he was saying was true. And I went back to him, and I told him I would go. And I think we went that night. That first meeting in Culpeper was that Friday night meeting right across from the Safeway. I don't know the name of that church, but that was the first meeting we attended in Culpeper, and we've been coming back ever since. All right, fast forward. So, back in the program, I know now what I need to do. I know right off the bat I got to get a sponsor. I know right off the bat I got to get into those steps. And I know right off the bat that I have to get a home group. Because, you know, the more I kept coming, the more stuff was stored in my brain from a long time ago came flooding back. And I knew I couldn't waste much time on it. You know, and so I went through a couple of sponsors, asked a couple of people. They told me no. And I remember not being upset about it. You know, I remember what I was upset about is going to meetings and none of the women would come up and say hi to me. And I remember going home one night saying to Chuck, you know, these women are something. Don't none of them say hi to me. He said, well, Dee, why don't you say hi to them? I was like, oh, my God. I might have to try that. So lo and behold, I started reaching out. And it's gotten much, much better. And So I got my sponsor, the meanest woman I thought in Culpeper. I said, that's the one for me. She's not going to take any of my crap. She's not going to feel sorry for me. She's going to tell me what I need to hear. And she was true to form. And she didn't waste much time either on the steps. And I remember her saying to me, I suspect, since you've had 16 years of recovery before, that you don't have to call me every single day. She said, but I will be at your house on such and such a day at such and such a time, and we're going to do the fifth step. And she gave me 2 weeks. And I was Joe and Charlie-ing it up. I listened to that CD like 50,000 times. I'm like, I'm getting this fourth step done. And that's what I did. And I'm going to tell you, if I'd known then, now what I knew, if I'd have known then what I know now, I'd have done it a long time ago. I wasn't going to do the fourth step. I wasn't going to share my deep, dark secrets with nobody. It was nobody's business. I was sober, and as a result of being sober, life was good, so I didn't see any need in doing no step work. I didn't see no need in sharing, you know, all of my dark secrets. And, yeah, well, when you go back out and you come back in, you know, something got to change. Change you must or die you will. And so that's what I had to do. And I was more willing this time than ever before. I didn't want to go back, you know, to that dark place that I came from. And so I got my fourth and fifth step done. And I went home and did my sixth and seventh step. And in a couple of weeks, we did my ninth step. I made my list from my fourth step. And we talked about my amends and how I was going to, you know, apologize, make my amends. And I've been on my 10th, 11th, and 12th step ever since. I cannot express how my life has changed. This has been the happiest 7 years of my entire life. And, you know, I'm so much older now. I wish I could turn back the hands of time, but I can't. And I know that everything happens for a reason, and when it happens for a reason. And I'm really grateful to have known, I know a lot of y'all in this room. I'm really grateful that you guys are in my life. I'm really grateful that y'all are here tonight. I know for like 4 years I didn't. You know what? You can get fired in recovery. All them times I was drinking and acting a fool, I never lost a job. I get in recovery and I lose my job. I get fired. And I'm just like, and I remember, you know, looking at all this stuff I've done for this company, how, you know, dedicated I've been, and how dare them do that to me. And it was a good job, y'all. But I know that God had to deal with me. And, you know, God deals with us in ways that we need it. He had to strip everything away from me, everything. You know, the job, the home, practically, the finances. He had to take it all from me to get humbled. You know, and today I'm really humbled. I know today who I am. I know today what my purpose is, and that's to help somebody else. On the next alcoholic, I know today that I have to do service. I have to give back what was so freely given to me. And most of all, you know, I have to love. I really have to love people in spite of people. And I have the best job ever to experience that. I work in an environment that's not a great environment. Every day I get to see me. Every single day. But for the grace of God, there I go. And it's hard, but it's good. I love my job. I haven't made this little bit of money in a long time. I mean, I work for pennies, and it's the most rewarding job I've ever had. You know, and I'm really grateful. And in spite of all of that, I have everything I need today. And I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And that's where I get, you know, my power. You know, the first part of that first step, we, you know, I know today that I cannot do this alone. And then I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to leave. They have this meeting on Saturday mornings. It's called the Any Length Group. It's in Culpeper at the Lutheran Church. And I remember when a couple of guys started that meeting, and I say it was a couple of guys, and it really wasn't meant for to be a guys' meeting, but the guys are the ones that started it, and they wanted it. And they had invited a lot of women, you know. But it's 7 o'clock in the freaking morning. You know, and Rich, I tell you, any length, what length are you willing to go? I used to tell them, I'm not willing to go at 7 o'clock in the morning when there's an 8 o'clock in the morning right around the corner. You know, Saturday morning, you know, you figure you done worked all week, you know, I need a break. And I just wouldn't go. You know, one time they had it at the house, and I was all right with that, even though that was hard. I had to, you know, get everything set up the night before because I'm not a morning person. I'm really not. So anyway, my husband was going, and, you know, I started seeing a change in him, a positive change. And like a good alcoholic that I am, I was getting some feelings behind that. How dare him outgrow me? You know, we have the same anniversary date. And I'm like, you know, he can't be, you know, outdoing me, outgrowing me, out, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm not going for that. So at first, you know, it was like, well, what did y'all talk about today? And he'd tell me what he learned that day and this and that and the other. And, you know, after a while, I was like, I'm going to this meeting, you know, and, you know, it's the best meeting in Culpeper. It really is. So if y'all haven't checked it out, you need to check it out. There's a lot of old timers there. They read first 164 pages of the big book. They do it by paragraph. And I mean, I've learned a lot by going to that meeting. I still have a hard time. Chuck called me. I'm like, not today. I just can't do it. I wanted to come yesterday all week. I'm going. And then Saturday morning come, I can't get up. So I didn't make it. But if you're ever in the area, that's the meeting to go. And one other thing, my home group is the hospital, Culpeper Hospital. We meet every Thursday night at 7:30. We focus on the first three steps. I can't, he can, and I'm going to let him. That's all I have. Thanks. Thank you.